Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight!
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, 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 everybody, to Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk radio, and music brought to you by Performing Arts Insider, Theater Magazine, Hewlett Minuteman Press, Copy Shop, and MortgagesRock.com. It's December 15th, less than a week to winter. But here's the good news. As of yesterday, believe it or not, the days started to get longer. I know winter is the 21st, and that's supposed to be the solstice or shortest day of the year or something like that. But I checked the calendar, as I've done the past couple of years, and every day from the end of summer through November, the days got shorter and shorter, of course, less and less daylight, until the sun was finally setting before 4:30 in the afternoon, which is one of the most depressing things about fall and winter. People seem kind of down, even on beautiful sunny days this time of year, because they get up, go to work, and by the time they finish lunch hour, the sun's already starting to descend. But again, here's a little good news to take you towards the weekend. On Tuesday, the sun set at 4:27 p.m. Eastern Time. In fact, it was setting at 4:27 the whole previous week. That's how you know you're hitting the solstice. Nothing moves. The days don't get shorter or longer, except by a few seconds. And then yesterday, the 14th of December, the sun officially set, not at 4:27, my friends, but at 4:28, 1 minute later, one extra minute of daylight. And it's 4:28 again today, and tomorrow, and up through Saturday, until Sunday, when we throw caution to the wind and stay light until 4:29. And on the first day of winter, we're already up to 4:30. So, if you're looking for a silver lining to the dreaded arrival of the cold and the ice and the snow, without having to buy into all that phony holiday cheer, just look to the sky, or the Farmer's Almanac, or your calendar from the Kosher Butcher, and you'll find at least one reason to be a smidgen more cheerful than you were when you first tuned in. And now, I'm going to give you another one. We have great conversation and music coming up on tonight's Dave's Gone By. Now, anybody who has heard this show more than a couple of times knows that one of my idols, perhaps my longest-lasting greatest rock hero, is Bob Dylan. Now, he's not my god or my leader. I don't follow leaders, and I don't drive, so parking meters are kind of moot. But of all the singer-songwriters in the history of popular music, he is the one who's had the most profound effect on me, has created the widest and deepest range of song, and through sheer longevity, just solidifies his iconic status without becoming an oldies act. With all due respect to John Lennon, McCartney, Tom Waits, Stephen Sondheim, the Gershwins, at the very top, there's Bob. Now, it's not that hard to find folks who agree with me. Thousands of people who came of age in the decade before I did crowned Bob Dylan the poet prophet of their generation, whether he wanted that mantle or not. I grew up in the 1970s, distanced from the earth-shaking politics of the 60s, and yet musically connected to it. So, like me, many in my age group, and even younger, feel that Bob reigns preeminent. But to find someone who was born not in the 1960s, not in the 50s, but in the early 30s, who reveres Bob Dylan is a bit rarer. And rarer still is the luck of finding a person who not only appreciates the poetry and musical gifts of the Bobster, but can explain in minute and rigorous detail why. Not just, oh, I love this song, or that's a really cool rhyme, but line by line, stanza by stanza, digging in, as a true critic does, to excavate every possible subtlety of expression. Such a man is Christopher Rix, Professor Christopher Rix, now in his early 70s, who taught English and poetry at Oxford in the 1960s. Then he moved to Bristol and Cambridge, where he was appointed King Edward VII Professor of English Literature. And yet, perhaps he was happiest of all in the 1980s, when he was appointed Warren Professor of Humanities at Boston University. That position allowed him to write books, including critiques on T.S. Eliot and Samuel Beckett, and his most recent work, Dylan's Visions of Sin. Not only does Rix explore Bob Dylan's songs for cadence and rhyme and wit and narrative, but he concentrates specifically on the importance of sin and redemption, virtue and damnation in Bob's songs, from the very first recordings all the way through Love and Theft. Alex Ross, reviewing for The New Yorker, praised Dylan's Visions of Sin. He writes, "Christopher Rix writing on Dylan is the best there is. Unlike most rock critics, 40-year-olds talking to 10-year-olds, Dylan has called them, he writes for adults." And the critic for the London Sunday Times wrote, "Everything Rix has to say about Dylan is original. He is a critic who seems to be talking to you from within the work. He can turn the smallest niche in a poem or song into a vast cathedral of resonance and implication." Pretty highfalutin stuff, but I promise you, this is going to be a fun, lively conversation all about Bob Dylan, sprinkled with Dylan's music on this edition of Dave's Gone By. I'm Dave, Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, theater critic, journalist, and amateur Dylanologist, and I'll be rocking with Rix from now till 8 o'clock. The days may be short, but tonight, I'll be staying here with you.
Listen to me, hear what I say.
That's right, buddy. Listen to me anytime you want, because Dave's Gone By episodes are preserved on compact disc. Entire shows with a nice cover, track listings, own your favorites, or give a Dave's Gone By CD gift. Dave'sGoneBy.org has an episode guide, and you can order there, too. $12 for CDs, shipping included, but add an extra dollar if you want an autograph. So go to Dave'sGoneBy.org, buy a CD, and listen to me. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Listeners to this program and listeners to my other show on the station, my all-music show called Filler Up, that airs Thursday nights at 9, will know, as they've known from the very beginning when I started doing Dave's Gone By, that I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan. He was a tremendous influence on my thinking processes, my musical life, my musical tastes, and that has not changed. I mean, he's the one I turn to most often from all different aspects of his career when I need a musical jolt or when I need to go sort of back in time to a place where I was a few years ago or just to be wowed again by his lyrics or the sound of his music or the sound of the band behind him. There's nobody quite like Bob Dylan, and you can approach his music from all different angles. And an author named Christopher Rix, an academic author, as a matter of fact, has gone through a bunch of his songs, a bunch of his albums, and synthesized a kind of concept involving what Dylan is doing insofar as sin and redemption and salvation. How many songs go into those directions and talk about that, either very explicitly or sometimes more subtly, of these issues that Dylan is grappling with. And Christopher Rix's book is called Dylan's Visions of Sin. It's published by HarperCollins. It's over 500 pages long, so I'm sure he gets into a bunch of songs very specifically. And we'll get into a few here on the show as we have Christopher Rix on the phone with us in the neighborhood. Hi, Christopher.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. I can't say hi. I'm English, but do go on.
Where are you from, England? From London or from...
Born just outside London. Have lived in this country now for 20 years because I'm married to an American.
Oh, you have my condolences. But how did you... When did the Dylan thing happen for you? When did it click in your head that there's nobody like Dylan?
It wasn't as early as it should be. That is the late 60s, not the early 60s. When I was, I'd been teaching in Berkeley in 1965, and I was a bit haughty and snooty, and I didn't listen to Dylan. That is, I only heard him. I think you've got to listen to him. By the time I was back at Smith College in 1968, I was listening all right, and I think that he's a genius, as you do.
Right. And what got you first? Was it the music, the lyrics, or the sound of it, or the
I think it is the combination, all right. I mean, you know, the art of song is a triple art, isn't it? The art of the poem could be the art of words only on a page. There doesn't have to be. There's his voice or voices. There's what the music can do, and there's the words, and each is equally important. And it's imperative not to forget the existence of the others. But just as you're allowed to quote some Shakespeare and talk about how magnificently the words create something for you, so I think you can talk about the words of Dylan without demeaning the art of song.
And would you say, I mean, it's never fair to do real comparisons, but I think it can be said that there's something about Dylan that goes over pretty much everyone else. I mean, even the Beatles, even brilliant lyricists like Ira Gershwin and Sondheim and Tom Waits. What is it about Bob?
Well, I think it's a great many things. I mean, that is, he is wonderfully prolific or fertile. You just think of the sheer number of songs, and then you think of the extraordinary variety of kinds of song. I mean, there are songs of religious awe, there are songs of political anger, there are songs of deep personal love, there are narratives and ballads. It's the immense range of things that he's done so widely and so deeply.
Well put. Very well put.
Thank you. That's how I earn my living. I'll try to.
Modesty becomes it. So you decided for this book to take a very particular approach to, because as I said, you can take a number of them, but yours really has to do with seven deadly sins, the four cardinal virtues, and three heavenly graces. Please don't ask me to name them, because I can't.
You've forgotten.
I've never had any virtues, so it's all sinning for me. But why that?
Well, it was partly my being struck by how often the word sin, the very word sin, turns up in songs throughout his lifetime. Then it turns up in very, very different kinds of song. It's in personal songs and love songs. It's in religious songs. It's in the political songs, what he calls the politics of sin. I think he's always been a religious artist. One of the reasons I honor him is that I'm not myself religious at all. And I find in his art a respect. I find that I'm able to respect and understand systems of belief that I don't myself hold. Now, I think that's one of the great things that we get from art is sympathetic access to systems of belief that we don't hold. We're not very good at being sympathetic and respectful.
No.
Sometimes there are people that we love who very unexpectedly, as it were, vote Republican or are Christians or whatever it might be, whatever kind of doesn't ordinarily fit us. It's a great gift in art to be able to do this, and I think Dylan is a great religious artist, and those of us who are not religious stand to gain from understanding that.
Well, what are the underpinnings of Dylan's religion musically? I mean, obviously born Jewish, born again for a while, then God knows where he's at personally right now. But in terms of his lyrics and his output, what is his religious faith and feelings about sin and salvation?
Well, I think one of the things that he most importantly understands about sin and salvation, you seem very reluctant to mention damnation. I noticed when you introduced this that you talked about redemption and salvation. There's this other thing, you know, that you and I may be heading for. But one of the things that he understands is that it is terrifically easy to fall into sins at the very moment that you condemn them. It's terrifically easy to give way to blind anger in a song that is an attack on people being so angry. It's very easy to attack lust and to really rather enjoy imagining lust in a way in which these films that are against the pornographic industry, films like Boogie Nights, actually go along with the sins that they pretend to be terrifically against. You know how often the newspapers will deplore the morbid interest in people's private lives? See page 7 for photographs of them taken by paparazzi.
There you go.
Yeah. So the songs, I think the concept of sin gives Dylan a perpetual reminder as an artist of what he is up against. That is, let's have a song about pride, like a Rolling Stone, which doesn't give way to pride. It is a song about pride, it knows that Pride is very strange of the seven deadly sins because it's the only one that actually is also a virtue.
Hmm.
I mean, that is pride. You know, I'm proud of my work. I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
There isn't an envy form of that, or a lust form of that, or a sloth form of that. So pride, I think, one of the reasons why it's one of his very greatest songs, I think, is that pride is a really strange and contrarious thing. And he captures that in this song, which is not gloating and not exaltation, but is a kind of thrilled horror at what's happening to somebody and what could happen to any of us.
Well, now you don't act so proud.
You don't talk so loud.
I think it's also more of a vanity kind of pride that he's going after there. So,
well,
not necessarily the good kind of pride, like, oh, you know, I'm speaking of a lust pride, like I'm a 15-incher sort of thing, which I wish, but, you know.
Well, I know what you mean, but I think that he knows the difference between vanity and pride, too. If he wanted a different word, you remember Disease of Conceit, which is a very, very good song, and it's important. It's about the particular form of pride, which is conceit, which he knows is smaller and in some ways more dangerous because more daily than the sort of great pride that the general might have. You know, we're all in danger of being conceited all the time.
So at what point did you really go through enough of his material to realize, okay, it isn't just more than a random thing. This is something worth creating a big academic book about.
Well, you keep saying academic is the only thing, it's the only reason I dislike you as yet. I mean,
give it time, sir.
You're quite right that I'm bald, and you're quite right that I'm in my 70s, and that I learned my living as a professor. But I do think the book's, I mean, it's an academic book, but it quotes The Onion, you know. It's got some very good things from The Onion in it.
Well, first of all, academic is not my word. I mean, I'm sitting attached to you and to the book when I was doing the research on it. And second of all, speaking of criticism, the one major criticism I've seen leveled at your book, because nobody has any, that I've seen any problems with your essential thesis or the things that you're saying necessarily about the songs themselves, but that you have a bit of pride in your word-isms, in your punnery, in the way that you're phrasing things, that you might
do.
Go
I
over
quite often overwrite. I mean, I do quite often overwrite. I need discipline. Quite a lot of people who underwrite can't write at all, so I'm not actually going to be abject about it. But it is true, on reflection, I shouldn't have made that pun. There are some quite good puns in there, I can tell you. I'm quite pleased of the thought that if you were a grudge, wouldn't you like to be held? And that's very relevant to, you know, only a pawn, even the pawns must hold a grudge and so on. Anyway, I mean, yeah, I overwrite. Thank you.
But tell me more. Give me some more examples of Dylan's work, hopefully some more of the recognizable songs. I mean, I know Disease of Conceit, I think it's on the same album with I and I, is it?
It's back on Oh Mercy. Yes.
Oh, it's on Oh Mercy, sorry.
Well, I believe so. It's true, I can't always do that. I can't always conjure any longer exactly which albums I'm
sure.
on.
But a song or two that we'd be fairly familiar with, where Dylan really grapples with issues of beyond our spiritual, or into our spiritual nature, beyond our corporal nature.
Well, I think one of his greatest songs is The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll. It's a song which is tempted all the way through to give way to the anger which William Zanzinger gave way to when he killed this woman quite needlessly at a Baltimore Hotel Society gathering. He wasn't found guilty of murder. The song doesn't think he should have, doesn't say he should have been found guilty of murder, but he was guilty of murderousness. And, you know, the judge stared at the person who killed for no reason.
So he is guilty of murder. Yeah, okay. Continue.
What do you mean?
Sorry.
You mean the verdict?
Yeah.
No, the verdict. He wasn't found guilty of murder. And nor should he have been. I mean...
What?
What do you mean, what?
Okay, William
Zanzinger... He's not found guilty of murder. The cops kind of wrote him in custody down to the station and booked William Zanzinger for first-degree murder.
Mm-hmm.
He's not found guilty of first-degree murder, and that's one of the reasons why he gets only a six-month sentence.
William Zanzinger killed poor Hattie Carroll with a cane that he twirled around his diamond ring finger at a Baltimore hotel society gathering. Then the cops were called in and his weapon took from him as they rolled him in custody. down to the station and booked William Van Zinger for first degree murder. Are you who philosophize disgrace and criticize all fears? Take the rag away from your feet. Now ain't the time for your cheer. William Van Zinger, who had 24 years, owns a tobacco farm of 600 acres with rich, wealthy parents who provide and protect him in high office relations in the politics of Maryland, reacting to his deeds with a shrug of his shoulders and swear words and sneering, in his tongue it was a snarling. And in a matter of minutes, on bail was out walking. But you, who philosophize history and criticize fear, take the red away from your feet. Now ain't the time for your tears. Hattie Carroll was a maid in the kitchen. She was 51 years old and gave birth to 10 children who carried the dishes and took out the garbage and never sat once at the head of the table and didn't even talk to the people at the table who just cleaned up all the food from the table and emptied the ashtrays on a whole other level. Got killed by a blow, lay slain by a cane that sailed through the air and came down through the room, doomed and determined to destroy all the gentle. And she never done nothing to William Van Zinger. And you who philosophize disgrace and criticize all fear, take the red away from your feet. Now ain't the time for your tears. The judge pounded his gavel to show that all's equal and that the courts are on the level and that the strings in the book ain't pulled and persuaded and that even the nobles get properly handled once that the cops have chased after and caught 'em, and that the ladder of law has no top and no bottom. Stared at the person who killed for no reason, who just happened to be feeling that way without warning. And he spoke through his cloak most deep and distinguished and handed out strongly for penalty and repentance William Van Zinger with a 6-month sentence. How about you? Philosophize disgrace and criticize all fears. time for your tears.
You're listening to WGBB. This is Christopher Ricks, who's recently published a book called Dylan's Visions of Sin.
Let's roll back into talking about Hattie Carroll, okay? Yes, the song says that, I assume that the song says he's convicted of murder, but he gets a very, very light sentence because murdering a black person is no big deal. That's what the song always said to me. You're saying that he was not convicted of murder, and that's why he got a short...
murder, and the song doesn't say that he was. I mean, the leniency of the sentence is a shock, and Dylan conveys that brilliantly with that tiny pause between A and 6 months. Judge handed out strongly for penalty and repentance, William Zanzinger with a 6 month sentence. And it's marvelous that he doesn't give vent to, he doesn't do what I would have been tempted to do in my easy indignation with a, Jesus Christ, can you believe it, 6 month sentence? Dylan doesn't do that. There's an equanimity and a plainness in the song, which is contrasted with the violence of somebody who killed for no reason, who just happened to be feeling that way without warning.
Right.
Now, that's a description of murderousness, which is everywhere in English and American life, and is not quite the same as murder. Do you see what I mean?
Well, it wouldn't be quite the same as murder if she'd only been conked on the head and, you know, needed a few stitches. It's the same as murder when she dies. And he threw a cane at her.
No, because the medical story is not. I mean, if you're really going into the ins and outs of the legal story, the among the things that brought the sentence down was the condition of her physical health at the time when she struck on the head. And it's important to remember that he hits her. It's not all right that he hits her, but she got killed by a blow, lay slain by a cane. And that word cane is at once lighter and heavier than you might expect. It's heavier because of C-A-I-N.
Right.
All these murders go back to an original murder, and Dylan repeatedly turns back to Cain and Abel in his songs. But there's also a lightness in the word cane that brings it clear that it's not De Niro with a baseball bat at the beginning of some mafia film. She got killed by a blow, lay slain by Cain. Now, he shouldn't, I mean, I'm not defending Zanzinger. I mean, he sounds as if he's still a thoroughly nasty piece of work.
Yeah.
That. But it's not a song that says somebody was found guilty of murder, but nevertheless got a 6 month sentence. It really doesn't say that.
From the song itself, I think we're led to believe that it was a guilty sentence, and the judge said, it's kind of like To Kill a Mockingbird, where the guy is obviously innocent, but they convict him anyway because he's black. Here's someone who's well-connected, who's well-liked and white, and got a little mad and killed a black person, and they can't let him go because, he did do this. So they give him a little six-month sentence. And also, I think it's a little different in the sense that when he says, it's not that now is the time for you to be enraged, now is the time for you to go jump and be angry. Now is the time for your tears. Now is the time for you to really weep and be upset.
Well, we agree that the last verse of the song is about a terrible failure to take with sufficient seriousness what comes before the courts. The last verse of the song does not use the word murder, nor should it. I mean, that is the...
Manslaughter, then? I mean, this is semantics. Okay, manslaughter.
But it's not just semantics. If you were on trial, you're not going to say it's just a matter of semantics whether they're getting you for manslaughter or for murder. I mean, come on. I mean, it's a song about a terrible injustice that is done both by Zanzinger and by the system which treats him with terrible leniency.
Good. Okay, yes.
We agree about that. It's just that you think that the last verse says he's found guilty of murder, but he's given a six-month sentence.
Okay.
It doesn't say that, and he wasn't.
Okay, fair enough. True. So, but it's also the fact that it's kind of interesting that you mention the way he did not hold back. Dylan keeps asking us to hold back from our rage and our venting. Yeah. But again, when he says tears, he's saying he's hold back, like, don't weep because the story's not over yet.
Yes,
it gets worse.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going.
I think you put that very well, but what I'm wanting to get at is the way in which one of the really powerful things when people go out after sins is that they not give in to them. It's so easy to be terrifically proud when you attack pride, to be terrifically envious when you attack envy. I mean, it's very, very easy to do that. Positively Fourth Street is a song that deeply dislikes the pretend friendship of somebody who really envies you.
Mm.
You got a lot of nerve to say you were my friend. When I was down, you just stood there grinning. So it is a song about gloating and envy and ingratitude. You know, you say good luck, but you don't mean it.
Right.
Why don't you just come out once and scream it? Let's get your feelings out. Now, for me, that's to be contrasted with Song for Woody, which is the expression of an extremely beautiful, lucid, simple generosity and gratitude. He's really grateful to Woody Guthrie.
I'm out here 1,000 miles from my home, walking a road other men have gone down. I'm seeing a world of people and things. Here, paupers and peasants and princes and kings. Hey, hey, Woody Guthrie, I wrote you a song about a funny old world that's a coming along. Seems sick and it's hungry, it's tired and it's torn. It looks like it's a dying and it's hardly been born. Hey, Woody Guthrie, but I know that you know all the things that I'm a-saying and many times more. I'm a-singing you this song, but I can't sing enough. 'Cause there's not many men have done the things that you've done. Here's to Cisco and Sonny and Leadbelly too, and to all the good people that traveled with you. Here's to the hearts and the hands of the men that come with the dust and are gone with the wind. I'm leaving tomorrow, but I could leave today. Somewhere down the road someday, the very last thing that I'd want to do is to say I've been hitting some hard traveling too.
Are you filled with uncontainable rage against everything and everyone? Try the special Jimmy and Robin Stress Reduction Plan. 3 hours of hardcore punk, metal, and grunge rock mixed with wild comedy from a crazy crew. Visit jimmyandrobin.com and hear Jimmy and Robin, Midnight Fridays on WGBB. Feel better? 30 seconds is a long time. You can say a lot in half a minute about your business, your product to sell, your message. Say it on Dave's Gone By. Easy, inexpensive, effective. For details and the rate card, davesgoneby.org or email davesgoneby@aol.com. Imagine how much you can say to my listeners by advertising on Dave's Gone By. Just like this, 28, 29, 30.
The program is Dave's Gone By. The station is WGBB. This is Christopher Ricks, who has recently published a book on Bob Dylan called Dylan's Visions of Sin. Dylan has a genius for gratitude. It comes out in the Scorsese film. He's wonderfully grateful to an immense number of people. And that's a kind of genius. Most of us are not good at being grateful or receiving expressions of gratitude even.
Well, and it's also that comes with age. I mean, at the time in the 60s and 70s, well, obviously, as you see in the film, he's just besieged and beleaguered by everybody.
Yeah.
Back then, I mean, he was picking up and dropping people like this, whether they deserved to be or not, and he would steal melodies, steal... Well, because he was like the sponge, the sieve. I think in later years now, he can look back and be a bit more generous.
Now, but Song for Woody is one of his only two songs of his own on his first album. I mean, that's on his very first album. So I don't know how you can say that Song for Woody represents his having got on in years and having to, you know, he can now afford to this and that. It's on his first album.
Okay. No, that's fine. That's on, but again, he recorded the first album before he was a star. You know, he felt very lucky that John Hammond plucked him out and said, okay, let's record you because you got a good review in the New York Times.
Yeah, well, there always is luck, though I think that there's... it's not just a matter of Dylan having been lucky, is it? I mean, you know, he has things going for him that go a bit beyond luck.
Oh, well, yes, of course. Let's get to...
You seem to dislike him as a person. You seem to admire his art and dislike him as a person.
Well, I've never met the man.
No, but you convey this thing, you know, you drop people whether they should have been dropped or not. You mean you think Joan Baez is completely in the right and Dylan is in the wrong? What?
Well, aside from Joan Baez, and that's a good person to bring up, but in the biographies I've read of him, and I've read a few over the years, and in the a couple of people that I've spoken to who were friends for a while, and then, you know, when he moved on, they were kind of like to the background, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess we all do that to some extent. I mean, again, if I start pointing at his sins, you know, I have to go look at my own and say, well, what friends don't I talk to from 5 years ago
well,
from
that's
school?
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
Didn't you think Susie Rotelot was very good in the film, though, in her the simple preservation of her great respect and affection for him?
Yeah.
I thought she was really good.
But they also didn't talk to the wife or mention the wife that he beat.
Did he beat her?
Apparently he hit her, yes. That was, or maybe they just said that in the court proceedings in order to get a divorce. Hey, Dave's Gone By listeners. If you like hearing me, you love reading me even more. So hurry and get my book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, filled with hilarious plays that were performed in New York, like King Solomon the Wise and Blind Date. 232 pages of pure Dave. Only $20 hardcover, $12 trade paperback. To get your copy, call 516-295-1511 or visit the Dave's Gone By website. D is for Dave, F is for fun, S is for silly and special, X is for excellent entertainment, DFSX, Internet Radio, playing vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By, Thursday nights at 8 and 11. It's part of Live 365, but all you've got to do is visit davesgoneby.org, click the link, and listen online to classic Dave's Gone By, Thursdays 8 and 11. DFSX, letters that stand for terrific! We are talking to Christopher Ricks, author of the book Dylan's Visions of Sin, published by HarperCollins, and we're talking about all these aspects of Dylan's songs that have to do with the way that people sin, or his personages sin in the songs, and that we can't really step far away from them because we see what we do in relation to what those characters do, and we can't just point a finger and say, oh, he's evil, oh, that was bad. Although he does do that in Masters of War. I mean, that's kind of an exception that proves the rule. That one where it's just pure finger point and then like, you know, I'm gonna make sure you're dead. Let's pick another song. Let's think of another song that illustrates some of the things that you're talking about in the book Dylan's Visions of Sin.
Well, I think a Handy Dandy, I don't know whether you know Handy Dandy, and that's a song about celebrity. You know, controversy surrounds him. He's been around the world and back again. Something in the moonlight still hounds him. So it's about what it would like to be in People or National Enquirer,
mm-hmm.
and it's about the horrible ways in which we actually envy these people, but look forward to their getting their comeuppance. You know how those celebrity magazines are about. These people are very rich, and they're more beautiful than us, and they have this wonderful lifestyle, and they're doomed. Their marriage is hopeless, and so on.
Around the world and back again. something if the moonlight still hounds you.
Well, I think it's an indictment of a celebrity culture, what it is like to be made into some sort of celebrity or image or icon and so on. Those figures often get into his songs, people of that kind, and he's at once fascinated by it and rightly in awe of it. It's dangerous. It's sort of poisonous. And that's why he treats the media people as he does in the great Scorsese film. They ask these insolently stupid questions. I mean, the man who says, "I've never heard you sing," and who says, "So I'm doing my job." Excuse me, if you're interviewing, I mean, Dylan doesn't say, if you're interviewing me, you are not doing my job if you have never been bothered to listen to anything that I sing. Do you remember the interviewer says to him, "Do you care what you sing?" And Dylan says, "Do you ask the Beatles that?" The person who asks him, "How many protest singers are there now who such and such?" And Dylan says, 136.
And that's a great line.
And the man says, exactly. One. And he said, well, somewhere between 136 and 142. These people, it's a world that at once celebrates a celebrity and tries to drag him down into squalor and exposure. They're always trying to expose him.
Well, actually, you mentioned before why I seem to have a negative view of him as a person, a person that I've never met, just from reading about him and seeing him in Don't Look Back. And that is part of it, because as a journalist myself, I can empathize with those people asking him the questions, and as someone who's sometimes had to interview four or five people in the course of a day,
mm-hmm.
not being able to read their books, not being or to do more than skim a tear shaver or a chapter, mm-hmm. you're up there trying to do your best and asking, and it's not your fault that this man's in a bad place and has been asked the same question 30 times.
Not be. I mean, I think as a journalist, you should sympathize with good journalists, and you should not sympathize at all with bad journalists, because bad journalists drag down the profession to which you honorably belong. I mean, I don't understand why you would sympathize with somebody who chooses to go and interview Dylan, but can't be bothered to listen to one song that the man has ever sung. Why do you sympathize with that person?
Well, because that's what they were told to do. I mean,
a lot of people have been told to do things that they really shouldn't do over the centuries. You mean he's just doing his job, like a torturer or something? I don't know. People shouldn't.
You can't make that direct comparison.
Well, he's not doing his job. He's failing to do his job. And I think if you care about the line of work, I mean, I don't sympathize with teachers who don't give, university professors who don't get round to marking the students' papers because they're very busy. I don't sympathize with them. I think they shouldn't be sympathized with. And I think it's odd to take the line that you sympathize with the journalist just because you're a journalist.
Well, but it's not as if the journalists are asking specifically nasty questions.
Oh, do you care what you're seeing is an insolent question.
Okay.
And if you phoned me up and said, do I care about this 500-page academic book, I would think, well, screw you, I've got to start talking to you. I mean, why should I for no reason at all talk to a total stranger who asked me an insolently aggressive question, which you haven't yet done.
Okay. I'm getting ready to. No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
I'm kidding.
All right.
Insolence and aggression. Let's see. Seeing Salvation. What is your overall thought about that era when he converted and when he was doing the Christian music for about three albums?
Mm-hmm. Well, I value those albums very, very highly, partly, as I said to you at the very beginning, because I'm not a Christian. Some people value them because they are Christians. Others value them if they hold my beliefs, because they think that entertaining seriously some beliefs you don't hold is a really important thing for human beings to be able to do. And we're not good at doing it. And we only ever do it with the help of people whom we love who disagree with us, or with the help of works of art that we love that we disagree with. So that I think he was always religious, and of course there were Christian songs long before the Christian, the phase of those three albums.
Mm-hmm.
Sign on the Cross is perhaps his greatest Christian song in some respects. He's never released it, but it's there in the Book of Words, and you can get a bootleg tape of it, and it's a smash of a song. And I think from the beginning he's been fascinating. He's always been a religious artist. I think those albums are very good, and they mostly got a bad press. There was some surreptitious anti-Semitism bent on them. The Berkeley Barb managed to say, something is happening and you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jew?
Wow.
Pretending that it was an anti-Christian remark, while, of course, also being an anti-Semitic remark. So I'm very glad now that he still sings those songs in concert. I mean, most concerts now have one of the Christian songs, at least, in there. And they're very, very fine songs. For me, they rank with George Herbert's poems.
May I ask what you were raised as? I mean, you say that you don't have a... I'm sorry?
Oh, raised... Oh, yeah, no, I was Church of England.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't believe that... I don't believe that God exists.
Oh, okay. Must have been kind of interesting taking this topic then. Do you believe that sin and salvation exist?
Oh, yes. I don't think religion, and certainly not Christianity, has a monopoly of concern with sin and salvation and damnation. Really don't. I think people do damn themselves here and now on this planet, irrespective of immortal life.
Oh, okay.
And I think people save themselves with wonderful redemptive glory. I mean, I think. So I've been told that the book is really kind of heavily Christian and so on, and that I'm just kidding myself that I'm Christian, really. No, I'm not. My oldest child is a Christian, but I'm not a Christian.
Hmm. What
is your faith? Let me turn it back.
Take a wild guess.
I've no idea. You're a kind of rationalist.
Thank you very much. And also, my last name is Lefkowitz.
Okay.
I mean, I think you can, come on, you can give it a shot. Give it a whirl.
Well, I know that there's a difference between Jewishness and Judaism. and I know it from kind of personal experience and so on. So I don't know anything about somebody's religion from the fact that they are or aren't Jewish, because many of the Jews that I know have no religious faith at all.
Interesting. Now that is a great answer. That's really, and it's very true. But I have a smidgen of actual faith and a bucket load of culture.
Okay. Very good. Well, don't lose touch with either of them. We better draw this to a close, just because life must go on, as the Beatles say, you know, how the life goes on. Got anything else to ask me?
Okay, yeah, let's make this the last question. What would you most like readers to draw from, both your book and then from your book about Dylan and Dylan's own work?
Well, I'd like to think in terms of the book that people might grant that I had noticed some things about how these songs work so well that they hadn't noticed. I mean, literary critics are just in the business of noticing some things on behalf of other people, and sometimes that's presumptuous and condescending of them, but I've read a lot of literary criticism where I feel really grateful. There was a really wonderful, wise, funny pun there, and I'd never noticed it, and thanks for drawing my attention to it. Had I been sufficiently vigilant and imaginative, maybe I would have noticed it before I died, but meanwhile, thanks a lot. I mean, artists are people who notice relations between the things that they notice, and critics are people who come along and help us do some noticing about that fact. So that would please me. But I think gratitude to Dylan really is more important to me than gratitude to me. I mean, I don't live on the royalties of a book. I mean, I live as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's a sense in which, though it would please me if people felt that the book had been worth writing on and worth reading, what matters is the extraordinary good fortune of living at the same time as Dylan.
I do have to ask one more question. I do.
Okay.
What's your Desert Island Dylan disc?
Well, I think Blonde on Blonde is the greatest single album, but I would be tempted to take, if I'm allowed, the two discs that sort of sometimes is and sometimes isn't. I'd take the English issue of the Essential Bob Dylan, which has 6 more tracks than the American issue for some reason. So you've got 36 tracks, and it is terrifically well chosen, and it's remastered, and I think it's the best anthology of Dylan put out by his people, the British or English Essential Bob Dylan. I think it's better than any of the greatest hits albums. But Blonde on Blonde, for the English, his art of love is even more moving and deep than the very fine things that he's written out of social conscience, social consciousness, or out of religious awe.
Well, that sounds like a next book right there, Dylan and Love. I mean,
I'm going to rest on my laurels, just as they are.
Well,
thanks for your company.
Okay, so your business proposal has been typed, proofread, photoshopped, and given a nice cover. Now, all you need is 20 spiral-bound copies and 1,000 printings of your latest brochure. Your Xerox can't do it. Your mailroom can't do it. Hewlett Minuteman Press can do it all. Your one-stop printing shop, Minuteman, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Open 6 days a week, 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. Family-owned Minuteman. Their service can't be duplicated. What's playing on Broadway? I'll tell you what's playing on Broadway, and I'll do it by checking Performing Arts Insider. Off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, off-off-off-Broadway. You keep adding offs, they'll keep adding listings. Who's in the cast? What's it about? Why is it special? Performing Arts Insider is Broadway the best way. 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Or see PerformingArtsInsider.com. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Gosh, I could do this kind of show every week, playing Bob Dylan songs and then listening to a brilliant, truly brilliant person discussing and analyzing this music that we love. Christopher Ricks. Get his book, Dylan's Visions of Sin, in paperback from Echo Books, a division of HarperCollins, no less. If you know a Dylanophile, this is the ideal holiday gift. It's very in-depth, yet breezy and full of puns and wordplay and quotes from Dylan's songs in almost every line. So if you're an aficionado, this is the kind of book you pick up off the nightstand, read
20, 30 pages until you start disappearing through the smoke rings of Christopher Ricks's mind. And then you just kind of have to stop and unload your head. Dylan's Visions of Sin. And since I've whetted your appetite for the Song and Dance Man, stay tuned to WGBB, because after Vic Fusco's Country Music in the Exile, I come back at 9 for a full hour of Bob Dylan music on Filler Up. Catch my weekly theater segment on the tail end of Joe Salzone's World View, Sunday nights at 7. Oh, and remember that big old rant I did 2 weeks ago about the Digital Media Copyright Act and Live365.com? Well, keep that on the back burner, because Live365 has found a way to rebroadcast my show within the parameters of these new copyright rules. So, if you want to hear the best of Dave's Gone By on DFSX Radio, it's on just a moment or two from now at 8 o'clock Eastern, and then repeated at 11. Just visit my website, davesgoneby.org, and click the links to listen right from your computer. davesgoneby.org is also the place to learn more about the show, see pictures, read lyrics, find links to the guests who appeared on the program, and links to our magnificent sponsors, Hewlett-Minuteman Press, Performing Arts Insider, and MortgagesRock.com, the funding phenomenon. If you know people looking to buy a house or refinance the house they have, maybe your neighbors need a college loan, you can help them build their dreams, and MortgagesRock.com helps you help them. Licensed brokers at Discount Funding Associates are there to explain everything, by phone, by email, in person. This is not some non-existent cyber mortgage portal. This is a fully licensed mortgage brokerage run by some very cool people who are demystifying and simplifying the process of real estate funding. MortgagesRock.com. Making money never sounded so good. And if I sounded good tonight, credit program director Tom Ross. If I sounded coherent and cheerful, thank my darling wife Joyce. And if I sounded grateful to be here, it's because you were there to hear me. I'll be back next Thursday. Hope you will too. December 22nd, the multi-sectarian, non-denominational, equal opportunity offensive holiday edition of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. I'll just say fare thee well and gone by.
So long, honeybee. Where I'm bound, I can't tell. Goodbye is too good a word, baby, so I just say fairly well. I ain't saying you treated me unkind. You could have done better, but I don't mind. You just kind of wasted my precious time. But don't think twice, it's all right.